No,
you know, I mean, you don't have to. Don't go crazy.
Don't go crazy. Don't go changing to try.
Don't go crazy to try to record me.
Okay, what is today? So, I mean, it's Tuesday, but
the 21st, March 21st.
The 21st. The is it the first day of spring officially?
Yeah, I think technically this year it was later yesterday. You know what I mean? Because it's actually a time during the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Astrologically, astronomically.
Well, then it only makes sense that it's raining in California. my level's okay, but this is about as good as it's going to get. Is this okay with you?
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Come on, you're the audio person.
I'll sweeten it a little bit. Well, I can't do it right now as we're recording. I'll sweeten later.
Oh, can't or won't?
Oh, maybe a little of both. maybe a third one of don't want to.
Right. Whoa. Can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is Tuesday. It is March 21st. It is episode 256.
256. Yep.
256. And this is On Taking Pictures. And what else? Your weekly photography thing?
Jeffrey, Bill Wadman in Brooklyn, Jeffrey Soros,
right.
Not in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Right. In Hollywood, California.
Which is why he kind of sounds like crap today. But that's okay.
Yeah, I'm in a hotel room in California. Of my own choosing.
There's a dead prostitute on the bed.
you know, you turn to Yelp to find duct tape and a shovel, and nothing comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're here in LA for a few more days, and it's raining. So it's really weird.
How does it feel being back? And can we go into that for like a minute and a half?
How does it feel? You know, it's really strange. A lot of things have changed. I went to Little Tokyo yesterday, and a lot of things have changed. Some of the metro stations have changed. The metro trains themselves have changed. It's familiar, but it doesn't feel as familiar.
Right.
It was odd. I mean, it was really strange.
Did you ever see?
But it was good.
There's a God. What movie or book is it in where they say or song, where it's kind of like if you go back to some place and it's nothing like what it was, and then, but if you go back 25 years later, it's exactly how it was. Did you ever hear that? Like, there's some sort of idea that if you leave and you go back soon after, like a year later, it feels like everything has changed. But if you had gone back 20 years later, it would feel like nothing had changed.
Huh.
I forget the song.
You know, maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
Because
it hasn't been that long. How long has it been?
2 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's strange. I mean, it was, you know, this isn't where I lived. You know,
I'm
in Hollywood, LA. This is not where I lived. This is 45 minutes from where I live. Now, I've been coming to some of these places for decades. The little taco place that is in Central Market that I love so much. I went there yesterday, and it has not changed. The little old guy that usually works there and has worked there for decades wasn't there. Whether he is no longer there or just, you know, doesn't work on Mondays, I have no idea. But I asked the kid that was working there, and he's like, I don't know, man. I just started 5 days ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, see, it's that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, and
how were the all tacos, the old places? Were they?
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
Still is good.
Okay,
yeah, still good. But a lot of the old places that were in Central Market are now gone, and they've been replaced with these sort of, you know, gentrified hipster eateries.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and there are only a very few of the older places left, and I wonder if next time I come back, will the old places be gone too? Because they've turned it into, you know, this spot now.
Yeah, sure,
you
know? Sure.
It's really kind of odd. Where, you know, on the one hand you've got, you know, coffee places where it's, you know, $7 for a cold brew, or you know, $12 for a scoop of ice cream, and you've got people 20 feet away who probably haven't had a meal in 2 days.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so there is this weird, there's this weird, you know, dichotomy between what's there and what's just beyond the edges.
What about the idea of the location as inspiration for you? Do you have a different feel creatively, for lack of a better word, being there than being at what is now home?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's, some of the stuff is still the same. Like the theater district, I have a lot of memories. I mean, I've been coming to downtown LA since probably 1985, 86.
Right.
And before then, I mean, my father lived here. When they moved from Nebraska, when he was, I think, two or three, they lived in Los Angeles. And I looked up where they used to live, and it's long since been razed, and you know, there's something else there now. But these theaters, the Broadway Theater, the Los Angeles Theater, the Palace, you know, he used to go to those theaters with his brother.
Right.
And they rode their bikes all over this town. So I've got my version of memories of LA, but then I've also got his memories of LA that have informed my memories of LA. And sure. And there are places where they either overlap or they blur.
Right.
You know, did I remember this the right way, or is this something that I, you know, was informed by the memories of my father or something?
You know? And also everyone around you has their own view of these same
Absolutely.
Places, right? It actually it kind of intersects with one of the emails we got this week, actually.
Yeah, no, start. Yeah, it does. Go ahead.
Mike, who treated me to a delicious lunch a couple weeks ago.
Is he the one who just posted the picture of you?
Yeah, did he put a picture? Yeah. He put it up, a picture of me in the subway?
Yep.
Sweet guy, very, very nice man. But he wrote in and was just saying, you know, what about taking the picture everybody else has taken? Standing on the Brooklyn Bridge, taking the picture of the bridge towers with the World Trade Center, WTC
sure.
1 in the background, or
sure.
the Eiffel Tower, or... you know, insert
standing in front of the Taj Mahal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That there's this, yes, there are better versions of this. And I generally, I'll take the obvious snap just cause, oh wow, look how good the Eiffel Tower looks there. I'm going to take the picture. I have my camera in my hand.
Right.
But I don't expect to actually do anything with that. It's just sort of, you know, a memory. Right.
Yeah. Well, like when you went to Falling Water, I took
the,
you know, from that
shot.
Vantage point.
Sure.
Yeah. Right across the stream. And,
yeah.
and because that's arguably the way Lloyd Wright wanted you to see the property.
Yeah. And they walk you to that spot. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, oh, would you like to see the photo location? Like follow right. us down this path. Right. And there's some argument to be made that, you know, it's not worth taking the pictures. When I saw a shuttle launch, well, 6-8 years ago now, actually. I didn't take any pictures. I just sat there and watched the shuttle go up because
right.
I would need specialized equipment, and Dan Winters has done it better than anybody else could.
Right.
So why bother? You know, so there are certain situations where I want to experience it. There's also the time of taking the picture. You know, Mike, I hope I'm not throwing out too much stuff here, but he was here with some family members. They were taking some pictures. Maybe it's about having your family in that picture or a member of
sure.
your family in that picture. So it might
absolutely.
Be the obvious picture, but personalized for you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But
how many people have taken that picture of Half Dome in Yosemite with their loved one,
right.
you know, placed just so? You want the iconic sort of memory of the place, but I think you're right. I think there is a degree of personalization that I was here, we were here, my wife and I, my child and I, my friend and I, whatever it
right,
is.
Right, right, right. Even if that picture from a third party point of view without the story behind it is meaningless.
Yeah.
Or is just ordinary, I guess is a better way of putting it, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's one time Conrad and I were up at the top of Glacier Point at dawn, and we had the place to ourselves for like 45 minutes one morning. As the sun
right.
was coming up, you know, over Half Dome, and took some pictures and stuff. And it's, you know, it was, even if that picture of Half Dome that day is, I think it's a pretty decent picture of Half Dome. Certainly not the best picture of Half Dome ever taken, but it means something because now I just remember, oh, sitting there with my wife watching this thing happen, you know?
So, absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny.
Those things take on meaning.
Yeah.
That go beyond the value of the photograph or not necessarily, value is the wrong word.
What value of what? Where were you going?
The value of the image in terms of, you know, yes, you've seen this image 1,000 times before or 100 times before or whatever, but the fact that you have made a picture that not only shows the place, but shows you in the place gives it another layer of depth.
Context.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this morning, Fielding and I went for a walk and they're doing construction on the Hollywood Bowl. And we kind of walked in. I said, have you ever been up there? And she's like, I think I've seen something here. I don't remember. I said, well, let's walk up and you know, see the shell. And we ran into some construction personnel and said, hey,
how big
is
that place? How many people fit in that place?
I think it's 18,000.
Oh, it's that big. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I asked one of the construction guys, and said, hey, you know, what's going on? What are you guys rebuilding? And we had a talk for 10 minutes or so. And I said, can we walk up behind? He's like, oh yeah, yeah. Just go up around this way. You can't get through this way. And yeah, go ahead. So we walked up and around and had the entire arena to ourselves.
Sure.
Had the entire amphitheater. There was nobody there.
Right, right.
And it was such a neat feeling because I've been there many, many times to see events, but I've never been there and had the whole place to myself.
Yeah.
And you know, the shell was empty. They didn't have, you know, the spheres that kind of hang down and all the rigging and stuff.
Yeah.
None of that stuff was in there. It was just kind of empty and it had a little net in front of it to keep people from going up on the stage. But, you know, I had to get the picture of, you know, from my vantage point in the audience, because it means something. It means, you know,
I suddenly picture you with mashed potatoes in front of you. It means something.
It means,
in the shape,
right,
of the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah. And this means something. Yeah. And it, you know, but it's true. So, I mean, it doesn't matter that these photographs are photographs that everyone else has taken. I mean, there's Hollywood and Highland here where the hotel is. There are viewing areas at the location. And for those of you who don't know, Hollywood and Highland is right across from the El Capitan Theater, which is a very famous theater, a Disney theater. Jimmy Kimmel tapes right next door. It's across the street from the Kodak, which is where the Oscars are and any number of things. And it's two doors or three doors down from what is now the TCL Chinese Theater. It's no longer Grauman's.
Oh, it's sad.
And it's a retail.
Yeah.
You know, it's an outdoor mall, basically. But there are two terrace levels that face out to the Hollywood sign. And from, you know, sunrise to sundown, you know, even afterwards, there are people out there taking selfies or taking photos of their loved ones with the Hollywood sign in the background.
Sure. Yep.
And it doesn't matter that it's on postcards and t-shirts, yeah, and et cetera, et cetera. I was here.
Yep.
This marks, I occupied this space. And that's, I think, one of the testaments to the power of a photograph.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you take video of, hey, look, it's me and Fielding in front of here we are in the Hollywood Bowl. Hey, sweetie, look at the Hollywood Bowl behind us. Like,
yeah,
that's never going to mean as much as the picture of the two of you standing there to me.
Absolutely. I believe that as well. I believe that.
It's funny you should say that story about the Hollywood Bowl. I did that once at Red Rocks outside of Denver.
Oh, no, I've never been there. I understand it's an amazing place, but I've never been
there. Went up there, and it was completely empty, and we walked around. I mean, to the point where you could walk up on stage. It was just like this empty, giant, empty place.
Wow.
It was pretty cool. Yeah. With Conrad and my friend Amy. Yeah, we were out there and we were like, oh, let's go up to Red Rocks. And it was dead empty. It was kind of cool. A very similar kind of thing you're talking about.
Yeah. It's a neat feeling. I mean, and never having been, you know, a performer or on stage or anything like that, I got as close as I could. I got to the front row, which I've never been to the front row at the Hollywood Bowl.
You said, hello, Los Angeles.
Right. It's great to be here. but I turned around and looked and imagined what it, you know, in a very rudimentary sense, what it must be like to be up on a stage like that and see tens of thousands of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
who came there to hear your music or to see you perform or, you know, whatever it is. And what an amazing feeling, and it could go the other way, but what an amazing feeling of gratitude that must inspire or instill.
Sure.
You know, if you're wired that way, otherwise it's, you know, yeah, that's right. I mean, you're here to see me.
There's also value. It's funny when you're taking pictures like at a national park or something too, you're also judging yourself, not also against other photographers, but also the days that they were there, because some days really are special with the weather looking mm-hmm. a certain way or mm-hmm. clouds coming in, or if it's snowing on the Brooklyn Bridge and it's the big giant flakes that you actually see in photos. You know what I mean? Like there are circumstances of the image that do give it some character that other images might not have, you know, or
sure.
take it yeah. from a different angle, or, you know, try to find the road less traveled, the photographic road less traveled, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I got no problem with taking the boring shot, you know, as it were.
None at all.
I don't think that it has as much value, like sticking it up on your wall. I guess, you know, there's one other thing Mike says about, you know, yeah, I could buy that picture of the Eiffel Tower or whatever, but if I took it, that's even better because it's my picture that's up on the wall, which I totally agree with too. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Something to put up there. Hey, where do you want to go from here? You want to do Bellwoods email? Do you want to talk about Tom Waits and Beck, or do you want to, where do you want to go?
Let's get Alan's email taken care of.
All right. Let me pull this one up. Alan, what's his last name again? Alan.
Braillewood. Right.
So Alan wrote in, friend of the show, Alan wrote in, just saying, The subject is starting projects without all the pieces in place. He says, I've got a series of a dozen images or so I want to do. I have them set in my head, what they should look like and what's needed. I'm not talking Crutzen level of setup, but more than a model and a light, mostly about location and finding the right one. Not having found the perfect place means the photo won't be quite right, and therefore I don't do it because I want the photos to look and feel like they do in my head, not the budget version, if that makes sense. Just thought it might make for a good discussion on the show. You know, it's funny. I was reading these actually kind of tie into each other. I was reading the Beck Kendrick Lamar Tom Waits thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Waits says something at the end here. I'm going to pull it up because it's actually pretty good. Where he says, yeah, here we go. He was talking about the crazy, he was a fireman and he went to a fire and a chicken coop was on fire. Did you read this whole thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says at the end, he said it was an emergency, he wrote. And when dealing with an emergent behavior, there's nothing to do but respond. It was in the moment. It was not the fire I imagined or dreamed of, but it was the fire that I got. And I feel like the same is often true of creative works. Whether it's writing a book,
almost 100%.
Yeah, it will never be exactly what you thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. You just let go of that.
And if
right
it is,
now.
If it is, what's the challenge?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. If it's easy to actualize,
if it turns
that,
out, then there are those who would say you're doing it wrong. That you should be off balance. That you should be to a degree more or less into the unknown.
Yeah, I remember when I used to do a lot of audio recording, and I remember Eddie Kramer, who was a really famous recording engineer who did, I think, Houses of the Holy, one of the Zeppelin records. And he came in and everyone's like, oh my God, John Bonham sound. Did I tell this story before? I feel like I told this story before.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, he if I did, stop me. And he came in and everyone was like, oh my God, that sound John Bonham got was amazing. Like, how'd you do that? And he's like, I stuck mics in front of John Bonham. Like, he sounded like that. In this house that we were recording in, I just put up a couple mics and it sounded like that. It wasn't anything special, you know? And we were in this studio that we had all worked in 1,000 times before. And Eddie Kramer goes and sets up. It was sort of like this workshop kind of thing. So he comes mm-hmm. in and the guy sets up drums, whoever the band was they were going to record. And he sets up drums and he puts up mics just like we would. And he goes in the control room and he starts turning up the mics. He asks the guy to play and the guy plays. And it sounds like a drum set in that room. It didn't sound like John Bonham. It didn't sound like...
Right.
It sounded exactly like it sounded when we were in that room too, because there's only so many things that you can control. you know?
Right.
Unless you are building a set like that guy from last week or Crudson or whatever, where you can meticulously go nuts for 6 weeks on a single image. Like, there's only so much you can do. You need to have an idea, try to sit down, plan as much as you can, try to come up with contingencies of things that could go wrong or places where you might hit a wall. But really, right. You got to kind of let it go and let it be what it's going to be, because it's going to have a character all its own that you can't control.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, think of it as Alan. Think of it as a filmmaker. A filmmaker has a script. A filmmaker has, you know, the words that are going to be performed, but those words can be performed with any number of different nuances or takes or emotions or deliveries.
Right.
Knowing exactly what you want and exactly the way you want the actor to say the lines, that's not fun for you as a director. It's not fun for the actor. It's not really probably very fun for the audience.
Unless you're Stanley Kubrick.
I mean, I'm sure there, right? I'm sure there are exceptions, but I think and this is something that I'm struggling with as well, because I have an idea in my head of a new body of work, and I know how I'd like it to turn out, but I've done enough of these to know that that's not how they're going to turn out.
Yeah.
The challenge is to allow yourself to be okay with them not turning out that way.
Yeah. Yeah,
because then you leave yourself open for them to turn out the way they need to turn out.
Yeah, and not for nothing, but just because it doesn't turn out the way you imagined doesn't mean it won't turn out better than you imagined.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. I mean, maybe Alan, maybe you're imagining it one way, and
but it's
and
better another
if you
way.
Hold on, yeah, you hold on too tightly, and you don't allow it to become what it needs to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've long since gotten to the point where it's a sort. I've realized that my process doesn't involve overthinking it, or when I do, it doesn't end up well. So I just sort of jump into things, even if my first shot out of the gate is terrible. At least right. I'm moving. Like I don't do whatever I got to do. I got to get moving. Let's go. You know.
Yeah. Don't overknead the bread, man. Just
yeah.
Get it to where it needs to be. No pun. And let it go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Don't overknead the bread. I like that one.
I mean, it's true.
No, it's
you know,
good.
It's just you have a you have the ability to control when you start and when you stop, Alan. And in between, that's the marrow. I mean, it's on a very tangential level. Let's say, look at this show. We have notes that we've had every week, I think, maybe except for the first couple weeks. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, you mean like going back and looking at our show notes?
Yeah, show notes. Sure. We do show notes for every show. And sometimes Bill adds more, sometimes I add more, sometimes neither one of us adds very much. Sometimes we've got 50 things.
Right.
One of the things that I think makes this show a joy to do and hopefully a joy for you to listen to is the marrow between the ideas.
Yeah.
Is what happens when we go, oh, Bill will go, oh, you know what? This reminds me. Can I talk about this for one second?
Yep.
Or I'll go, oh my God, hold on one sec. Let me just jump in here. That's where things get interesting.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it is this idea of allowing yourself, and I talked about this in the last issue of my newsletter, is allowing yourself to play. Give yourself permission to play. And if you need to not call it work, because work implies something maybe too serious or too perfect or too finished, then call it something else, but allow yourself to play. That's where the juice comes from.
It's half the fun.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's,
I mean, look at, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's, you know, the more you do, like I'm, you know, doing these things every day, what am I, 80 something into it or whatever. And
right.
It's the good thing about doing it all the time is that, yeah, there might be a day where something doesn't come out quite as well as I wanted to, or, you know, just like we said, like it might come out better than I expected, less than good as I expected. But the fact that you're doing it all the time makes it sting less when it doesn't work out, because you're working on the next one already. You know what I mean? Like there's no
right.
time to mourn.
Well, and you're doing something kind of cool, because you're putting up not only the final, but maybe a couple outtakes. And that gives us as a viewer,
yeah,
almost
an idea of the road less traveled.
Yeah, in a very limited sense, we go back to that Magnum Contact Sheets thing.
Yep.
We can see a little bit of you working an image,
sure,
or of you working an idea or a subject,
whatever it
is. That
might actually
be a
fun way of doing it. The problem with Instagram is that they're so low res, and even if you zoom in, they're not actually that high res. I was going to say it'd be fun to do like a contact sheet of the final eight or whatever it is that are in the running. You know what I mean? That could be a fun way of doing it.
Right.
The outtake. Sorry to interrupt.
I mean, you can do the multiples now where you can kind of swipe through.
Mm. That's true. Maybe I could do that. I could do that.
And then that way you don't have to have a grid of
ones from today. Yeah.
Six or eight on one sheet. Maybe on occasion, maybe a half dozen kind of outtakes or alternates or whatever. I think it's kind of cool that you're doing two things. It's allowing viewers to see kind of into what's going on, but it also kind of drives both ways. Although I don't think, do you mention, I know that you say here's an outtake for 365, but on the 365, do you say for outtakes visit your other?
No, but I guess I could put that up in the description up top or something like
that. Yeah. That might be a way to kind of get people back and forth, say, hey, if you dig this, here are some of the alternatives.
It's really hard sometimes because there are days when I'll go and I'll be like, oh man, I like these two I really like. And I kind of lean towards this one. And I kind of have a little bit of a rule where it's, I want to, as a general rule, if there are two, take the riskier one. You know, choose the one that's less like what I would normally do, even if the other one is a very good example of what I would normally do. You know,
sure.
And sometimes I'll put that one up in my main feed as an outtake. Yeah. But mm-hmm. the point is that doing that is fine because you're always moving on to the next day. So in some ways, keeping things precious is not a virtue, you know?
Yeah.
It's just another thing. We got tickets to the Atlantic Theater Company because Darren Brown is coming into town in a couple, mm-hmm. a few weeks. And it turned out that it was cheaper for us to buy basically a membership to Atlantic for two seats because, you know, you get four tickets or something like that. You know, whatever the thing was, Conrad decided that it would be worth us subscribing to this theater company. And there was a new David Mamet play that's coming through that we were going to get tickets for. Well, see, okay, there I do too. I like David Mamet. But apparently she went and looked at the reviews and they were awful. Like,
oh, really? Yeah.
And here's the thing. People never...
Is it the content that's awful or the production?
I guess it was very short and it was way too long or way too short, that the characters weren't well developed, that it was very depressing. You know what I mean? Whatever the thing was, right? It got this really sort of bad review. And people forget that every single one of the artists whose work you love had a lot of stinkers in there as well. You know? No one's perfect, you know?
Well, okay, look at baseball players.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
If you've got a 300 average, it means you're missing 70% of the time. So, you know, cut yourself some slack.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of fun to think, you know what? Yes, the things that hit, people will remember the things that hit. People will forget the things that don't. So just keep going, you know? It's interesting. We put this article in last week, the one that I referenced about Beck and Kendrick Lamar and Tom Waits. And first of all, I feel like the title, which is Three Iconic Musicians on Artistic Creation and Its Importance Now. I feel like
it's a little misleading.
The importance now is completely misleading. Not one of them talks about, you know, the current political situation. We need to XYZ. It's all just them talking. Tom Waits is by far the best spoken of these people, you know, or the most interesting speaker, you know, the way he puts things.
And I mean, there's probably a lot to just the time that he came up.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, he's probably got at least 20 years on Beck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's always of these three, as far as I know. I mean, I've listened to Kendrick Lamar's record. I'm not an enormous fan of his. I don't listen to him all the time, but I'm aware of his work, as I am with Beck. But Tom Waits is by far the most interesting of these three guys, in my opinion. But, you know, that's could be just because I'm old, you know. It's just there's this sense of not knowing where the creative experience comes from and just being open to it when it shows up. You know, I think all three of them are kind of talking about that. And that even one of them says the whole thing. Yeah, here it goes. Leonard Cohen once said, "If I knew where the good songs came from, I'd go there more often."
Right.
And then
turns out it wasn't the Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah, and then apparently Tom Waits said, "For the rest of us, it appears not only that he did go there often, but he got a room in the tower and he paid in advance for the whole month."
Right.
Again, Tom Waits putting to words something that other people would have a trouble doing, you know. But there's this element of I think we beat ourselves up too much, you know?
You think?
And, you know, just, I mean, look, you know, back to your whole, you know, the only thing you control is when you start and when you stop. Beyond beating yourself up about the idea of like, oh, I should go out and do something. Once you're doing something, like, I don't care what you make. It might not be something I'm personally interested in, but like, at least you went and did something, you know?
That is true. That is true. The making, I'm finding that in these little Instagram live paint sessions. Right. The fact that my hands are in motion and marks are being put on paper or canvas or whatever it is, Right. That's the joy.
Right.
Whether, you know, and if you can get to that point, and I'm not saying I am there, I am saying there are glimpses of me, there are flashes when I'm there. But when you're there, and maybe for you it's hearing that shutter sound, letting you know, yep, I'm capturing something.
Yeah.
I'm in it. Whatever that is, if you can let yourself just do that, and it goes back to what I said a moment ago, and just give yourself permission to have fun, to play, good things will come out of it. It may take a while, and you're going to have to, you know, wade through, what's the thing, your first 10,000 photos are your worst
something? Yeah, yep.
You know, you've got to paint the crap, write the crap, photograph the crap, sing the crap, whatever it is, to get to the good stuff.
Yeah. There's a, you know, people have been asking me when I'm going, I'm in the thing taking their picture, they'll say like, why are you doing this? You know, and I'll be like, why am I doing this? For this, for you and me standing here doing it. Like that's right. Honestly why I'm doing it. You know, like, great. If I get stuff from my portfolio, great. If I get lots of followers, great. But all of that is just whatever. I'm not going to care about that when I'm dead. You know, but when the light is fading, I'll be thinking, wow, I had some really great experiences with hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, and that is worth it to me regardless of all the rest of it, you know? Anyway, it's, go ahead.
One more thing. You mentioned something about being open to it. And I think that's another key component that a lot of people reference, including Waits in this piece when he's talking about Keith Richards.
Right.
You know, where it's just,
he's a lightning rod, I think is what he says.
Something a lightning rod, like a receptacle or something that. But it was that idea of, you know, and Picasso said it in his own way. It's you know, it has to find you working.
Right.
If you are in motion, and it, you know, kind of goes back to Newton's laws, right? An object in motion tends to stay in motion. So if you are making work, and if you don't want to call it work, call it something else. But if you are at the place where you are making and moving and writing and singing, whatever it is, chances are more of that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. And you just have to... You gotta like what? Not the kaleidoscope thing. What is your? There was another one about, like, you know, holding the handlebars loosely. Isn't there some other momism of yours or something? I feel like there's don't hold on to the steering wheel too tight. Something along those.
Well, lines. there's a line from Croupier. This is hang on tightly, let go lightly.
Yeah.
Which is a terrific film if you've not seen it.
That. Croupier, I haven't seen that in years.
Clive Owen.
Yeah, some people, Clive Owen at his best, according to some people.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah. Though that movie and the short films, the Driver series that he did for BMW.
Oh, right. I forgot about those too.
Yeah, and those were great. I mean, Gary Oldman was in that. Marilyn Manson was a guest. Danny Trejo.
Made $2 million.
Yeah, I mean, produced by Ridley Scott. Terrific.
Yeah. That's always, I like these actors who were just like, I got paid $500,000 to do this movie. I got paid $3 million to do this 30-second ad.
Right. And I got to keep the car.
Yeah. A friend of mine was an actress in a Cadillac commercial recently, and there's a scene where she puts these plans, these architecture plans in the trunk, and she closes the trunk and she goes and gets in the car or whatever. And I'm like, how many times did you have to close that trunk? She's like, you have no idea. I had to close that trunk like 600 times.
But I mean, if it's in, you know, rotation nationally, that's big money.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's tens of thousands of dollars for a national spot.
I think she did fairly well on it, which was just kind of cute. She was like, oh God, I had to close that thing so many damn times. It's funny. Hey, why don't we talk about our sponsor and then we'll get into some news things. Is that cool? Squarespace is sponsoring us today.
It's if you want to build your own website, you get Notepad.
You could do that.
It's
open angle bracket HTML, right. Close angle bracket.
Close. Mm. You got to declare your document.
Yeah, right? Yeah, of course.
Otherwise the browser is going to get confused, you know. You don't want that.
Title, open style tag. No, you should.
Bill's getting hives even as we speak.
Yeah, let's go old school. Let's build it using tables, you know. Remember that? Oh God, yes. It was so bad. I don't know how people did it. I mean, I did it. I think you and I did it for a living. I don't. Oh yeah. God, that was just, well.
On a Macintosh G3, no less.
Oh, see, I was always on a Windows NT box, and the IT guy. I was the only creative guy in the agency who used a Windows box, and the IT guy loved me for it because he was like a Windows guy. And I remember he called me. I got the job, and I get this thing. Hey, it's Rick. I'm the IT guy at the company. You know, he's just like, what? You know, what do you want? You want a Mac? You want what? I was just like, can I get an NT4 box? And he's like, you want a box with NT4 on it? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, you could do that. <He's just> like, I remember I had the admin password to my computer. Like everyone else's was locked down. Like Rick's eyes lit up.
Yeah,
Rick trusted me to like put everything I wanted on my computer. He was like, you know what you're doing. Like, I don't have to worry about you.
Nice.
Anyway, that was back in the bad old days. But now
this was a PS, pre-Squarespace.
Oh yeah.
Or B.
No,
it wouldn't be BS.
It's before Squarespace. Nice. Squarespace, make your next move, Jeffrey. You already moved from LA to DC.
If I can ever get out of this hotel room, I will.
There's a beautiful award-winning designer templates created by award-winning designers. They built these things. They're just beautiful. They're responsive, so they look good on every device. They've got lots of nice open white space. They're clean. You can build your whole online store and your website with the same template so that if you have a store on your site, it looks the same as all the other beautiful stuff on your site. And it's not like you jumped out into some other thing from 1998 to make a purchase, you know?
Regardless of whether, honest to God, I would not mislead you guys, regardless of whether or not they are a sponsor, I must say that their e-commerce integration, adding a product, whether it's a good or a loadable good, is absolutely drop dead simple. It is one of the best implementations, if not the best, I've seen. And I've tried WooCommerce, I've tried JigoShop, I've tried, you know, Magento, I've tried a bunch of different solutions. I've talked to people who have used a bunch of different solutions, and this is about as seamless as you're going to get. Whether you want to have your gateway with PayPal or Stripe, I prefer Stripe, but PayPal's good too. It's a terrific implementation.
I couldn't agree more. And it's also, remember, it's an all-in-one platform, so there's nothing to install, nothing to patch, nothing to upgrade ever. And they've got award-winning 24/7 customer support. You can email them or chat with them, and they're like right there answering your questions, checking things out. And now Squarespace allows you to buy your domains with them. So if you just want to, you know, buy a domain for your site, or you just want to buy a bunch of domains that you're park somewhere, you can do that through Squarespace. So all your stuff is in one place. It's a fully transparent, simple to set up, flexible for any kind of website. Squarespace is used by a wide range of creative people. Businesses, musicians, designers, artists, restaurants, and more. Go try them out. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code. And I know Jeffrey's going to get this wrong, so I'm going to say it. OTP.
Pictures. Shit. Is it really?
Yeah, OTP. To get 10% off your first purchase.
I thought I said OTP last week.
To get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for On Taking Pictures, thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures.
Who has pictures? Who am I inadvertently driving traffic to?
What other Squarespace sponsor uses the word pictures? And
right. And why have they not called to thank me?
I bet you it's Ted Forbes. I bet you. Hey, Ted.
You're welcome, Ted.
Enjoy the numbers. Squarespace.
Coffee on you next time we're in Dallas.
Make your next move.
Right.
Hey, you put this up here that, so there's this new electronics ban on certain flights. I'm just going to move it down here.
Yep.
new electronics ban on certain flights from certain countries in the Middle East. I read this, and the way I read it is they must have some specific threat warning. You know what I mean? They must have gotten some chatter that says somebody's going to try to bring on an iPad or a camera with something in it, you know?
I'm not going to get political, right, but that would run in the face of what the current administration has done thus far.
Sure. I'm just saying that, like, all of a sudden it's just these particular airlines from these places. I don't know. It just seems, and it's, it took effect at 3 a.m. in the morning, you know? So I don't know. I feel like there must be something going on. But yeah, the idea is that they won't let you take anything bigger than a phone on the flight, and you got to check it, right? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, and listeners, this is for you. Podcast it on takingpictures.com if you've got some feedback. How do you feel, or do you now check your camera gear, or do you carry it all on? How would you feel if they told you, what would you do if you got to the gate, or got to the, not the gate, but well, I guess it is the gate. And they told you had to check your camera gear.
You know,
would you do it?
I have two problems with this. One, I don't check anything ever unless I absolutely have to. So I can't remember the last time I checked something. I'm a carry-on guy. I use a single backpack for all my clothes, for even for a 2-week trip. Like, I'm Conrad and I pack light. And my camera is usually like my carry-on, and I usually use a small little backpack, you know, that can slip under the front seat. The problem that I would have with it is that my carry-on, which has my camera in it, is in no way ready to be thrown in the bottom of a plane, right? It's not like I have a Pelican case for my camera, but I don't travel with that Pelican case on planes most of the time. So if somebody said, you have to check this, it's just in like a little crumpler zipper bag. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
That gets something else, a big, giant, heavy 300-pound thing dropped on top of it. My very expensive camera's cooked. Yeah. So I would have a problem with it from that point of view, almost to the point where I'd say, you know what, I'll FedEx it to myself rather than stick it on there or come up with some other plan, you know?
So those of you who do travel regularly, either domestically or internationally, what do you do? Podcast it on takingpictures.com.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you read so many, or it seems like you do. You hear these stories about things gone missing. Yeah.
Well, this happens a lot to friends of mine who are musicians who have to check guitars or saxophones or whatever it is. And they get it back and they're Selmer Mark VI, you know, which is incalculably valuable to them because they found it 20 years ago and it's their instrument. You know, they get it back and it's in pieces or bent or whatever, you know. That's terrifying. I don't know what to do about it, you know. Also, I found this other article from the Washington Post. Apparently, so back when the United States was doing all its atmospheric nuclear tests back in the 45 to 62 era, they shot all this really high speed footage. It would be, you know, 10,000 frame per second crazy footage of all these explosions so that they could do all kinds of analysis of it, right? And a lot of this footage but a lot of this footage is getting just disintegrating and degrading over time. So a bunch of guys at Livermore, which is east of San Francisco, Lawrence Livermore Lab, have been collecting all of this footage, digitizing it and cleaning it up, like basically putting it together. And the guy, apparently they recruited Subruder film preservationist Jim Moy to help digitize the footage so that it's, you know, they're putting a bunch of all the declassified stuff up on YouTube so you can see these crazy explosions at, you know, 1,000 frames a second or whatever the hell they are.
What did he say? They've got They've done like 400 of them so far out of...
They found 6,500 out of 10,000 reels from the era of above ground tests, and they've scanned 2/3 of these, and the Department of Energy has declassified just 750 of them. The government has only allowed the public to see footage now is not an issue of secrecy, but a matter of red tape, he says. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there were times when, you know, I was actually doing some reading last night and, you know, where they wouldn't show images of the test devices because in the image or in the test data that came out, oh, we can see that there's a peak in, you know, strontium 5743 or whatever that can cause a really smart physicist person to go, oh, I see. They're doing like a 3-stage design because that's the only way that could have happened.
Right.
I understand that kind of stuff. But we've seen nuclear explosions. All the people who really know how to make these things and have the technical expertise and the money and the whatever to do them, this is not unknown science, you know. There's nothing here that you're going to see in things blowing up that I can imagine that actually makes any bit of difference. But it is this interesting thing of everyone always says, oh, we transfer things to film because film will last forever and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff, which, yes, has a place, but it's not indestructible. It does degrade.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's still
and who knows how some of these things were stored.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In some physicist's trunk or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how much material that we're finding now has just been left in a back room or, and it's not been, you know, in a controlled environment or, you know, whatever it is.
Well, they said here, scientists were able to wring new information from old detonations. Modern analytical techniques applied to digitized footage revealed inaccuracies in past estimates of fireball and shockwave size, which in many instances had been derived by hand. We were finding some of these answers were off by 20 or maybe 30%, Spriggs said. We've also discovered new things about these detonations that had never been seen before. It's just really, I don't know. We need to be able to validate our codes and trust that the answers are being calculated correctly. I don't know. I thought it was pretty interesting. This is a bit of a pet subject of mine. There's a little video here as well as a little behind the scenes thing of them talking to the guy who's doing the digitizing as well as some of the tests. And for those of you out there who are nerdy, go take a look.
Indiana Jones could not have survived in a refrigerator?
I don't think Indiana Jones would have survived inside of a refrigerator. Although that could have been a lead-lined refrigerator in some way, right? I did think that was like a really ridiculous scene, that movie.
One of many in that movie.
Yeah, it was not very good.
No, and now they're doing a film.
Are they really? One more rodeo with the hat and the
yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what?
Indiana Jones and the Search for Creative Integrity.
Very, very good. Very, very good. Hey, what do you think about these Polaroid swing stuff?
Okay, I wasn't quite. Short answer. I think it's kind of cool. So, did this company license the name from Polaroid, or is this an actual Polaroid?
I don't know.
Is this in-house, or it wasn't real clear from that article, was it?
Yeah, it's taken the name and spirit of Polaroid and repackaged it into a new enterprise with a mission. So it must mean that they must have bought it somehow, right? Or bought the name?
Yeah, it just reads, the Silicon Valley startup Polaroid Swing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I think it's kind of neat. I mean, these cinemagraph things are kind of popular.
I mean, that's what it is, right? It's a cinemagraph that you can control, right? The idea is that you sweep your mouse cursor across the image, and it kind of does the animation forward or backwards. Like, you can kind of scrub across it. It's pretty neat,
right? I think it's kind of
It's going to be interesting to see how easy these things are to put up here and import and use and share and all the rest of it. Man, we have so many ways to show all these different things. It's hard to add a new one, you know? Like, what's the angle for this?
Right. A new one that will catch on.
By the way, the Polaroid in, God, whatever that is, a Franklin Gothic caps light spread out the tracking, the Polaroid logo there, is so nice.
Yeah, they did a nice job on the brand.
Yeah, they really did. You know, I'll give them that, you know. Have you tried making any of these things? Not the swing specifically, but the app.
But no.
It seems like a I can never tell if it seems like a lot of work or not. You know, I guess there's apps that basically, what do you just highlight the part you want to have still move while the rest of it stays still, kind of thing.
I know you can mask it out.
Yeah. Oh, you get to mask it out. Okay. All right. You got anything else before we go to the group?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just getting to the.
Can you get that from there?
Sorry, guys. I'm. Yeah. We can't get. I'm on my phone.
You're bandwidthly challenged.
The way I've got. I am bandwidth. The way I've got my Zoom H5, which is the mic that I'm using right now. That mic. And I'm using my phone, and out of my phone, I'm going into a little thing called an iRig, which is then splitting the signal and doing a little magic and sending
dancing the Macarena
the output. Right. And sending the output and the input into the Zoom on different tracks. But the bandwidth, why my voice sounds probably really crappy. I sound great to me because I'm just monitoring me, but to you it probably sounds horrible because the Wi-Fi bandwidth, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, AT&T, is really abysmal.
Yeah.
In this
way. Well, it's shared between you and 1,000 other people.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where my T-Mobile LTE is faster than this.
You should just record it on T-Mobile LTE. Don't you have unlimited data?
Wi-Fi, yeah. I do, actually. So, yeah, we should have, actually. what was
Contrast, I do believe.
Contrast.
And, there are some amazing photos in here. Dennis's picture, Mario's shot of the apples. Dennis's picture of the library, Mario's shot of the apples is amazing.
Yeah. Max Next, nice.
Yeah, God, man. The Paul Yan's picture of the fountain with the silhouette in front is really great. These shots of the trees that Winslow put up. Oof.
I will tell you one thing. Todd Schick,
yeah.
I hate the cold, but your photographs make me want to go to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You pull out some of the coolest stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Colors, vehicles.
Did you see Rob Eve's picture next to the lake with the woman on the ground?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, son.
Yeah. Come on, son. Yeah. Yeah, in fact, Rob, is that a single exposure?
Yeah, serious props.
What do you, even if not, regardless, I just want to know how you did it. And so, Rob, let us know. Yeah, Tim, another one.
Waller's apparently in a military cemetery.
Paul Yan.
With the guy looking back with the train zooming past?
No, the trees.
Oh, that one where it's like all distorted? Yeah. Come on.
So good.
Come on.
Winslow, terrific. Yeah, some really beautiful pictures. Man,
Paul's
in here
Paul Yan is on fire. Look at these pictures.
Yeah. Michael Atancio at the fountain. Terrific. Terrific.
Let's see. Michael Binslev, the nice contrast in Athens, beautiful. Mike's picture of a double exposure of the Fox Theater is really nice.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Well, you know what? You guys suck because you're really good. Yeah. Guys and gals are amazing.
Corollas. Oh, my God. Look at that pink Dodge Charger.
Uh-oh. Jeffrey's getting nostalgic about the 70s again. Here we go.
Come on, play us out with a 70s love song, Bill.
Yeah, let me know when you're done nostalgizing. I'll come right back. Gardner's picture of this gentleman with like what, chalk all over him or something. It's pretty cool. Dancer guy, do you see that one?
Yeah,
the black and white shot.
Yeah, some good stuff. Really, really good stuff.
Beautiful. I had an idea for one. If you got a better one, let me have it. I just thought away would be fun just because you're away.
Away, yeah. Going away, yeah.
Away.
Far.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Hashtag away.
Hey, I went over to Sammy's.
Yeah,
today.
And they said
to tell you. I got to actually hold and kind of mess around with a bunch of different cameras.
What'd you end up playing?
XT2. XT20 Fuji, yep. The OMD EM5 Mark II, and the EM1 Mark II, gorgeous camera. Great grip, feels beautiful, solid, really nice. was able to handhold a 1 second exposure. Really nice.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, really nice. Viewfinder on the X-T2 was probably the best of the bunch. I looked at the Panasonic GX85, the GX85, and then the Pentax K1 and the Nikon D500.
Is there any camera you did not hold that's currently available?
We got to look at these things. I've read about sure. them, but you know, GX85. I've talked about that as an
it's
option.
Panasonic.
It's way too small. It's way too small.
Okay.
It's tiny.
Yeah, sure.
Of the one, I think if I had to choose, DSLR D500, mirrorless, it would be a tough call between the EM1 and the X-T2. They're both really superb. I think the EM1 would probably win out just because of the stabilization.
Does the EM1 also have the high mode?
Yeah, high res mode, which is amazing.
But it doesn't have the cool X-Trans stuff that the special sauce that Fuji has.
Yeah, it doesn't, but it does look beautiful.
Yeah.
Whatever they're doing, it's a beautiful... It's expensive,
sure.
You know? I mean, it's... Regardless of whether it's a four-thirds body, it's $2,000 sure. for the yeah, body. Yeah. No, now that little camera with the 12 to 40,
yep. 12 to 32 maybe. Anyway,
no, 12 to 40 f/2.
Oh, this is for the Fuji.
Yeah.
The Olympus. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Okay, my bad.
Yeah. So anyway, so it was interesting to finally get a chance to hold them all sure. and kind of look through them.
And yet, you still have no good answer.
No.
Hey,
no, closer.
Sorry, I just realized something we didn't talk about just because we were so weird with the schedule today.
Yep, go.
Responses to our discussion of depression last week was astounding.
Right.
And we got a lot of emails and texts and yeah. tweets and voice
can
messages.
Can we talk yeah, about those I just wanted to, next week when I'm back?
I just wanted to mention that we got all your messages. We appreciate them.
Yes.
I feel like we talked about some really good stuff that might deserve some further attention. I just didn't want to not go through the whole show without
yeah.
mentioning
it. No, good call. Good call. Thank you. And yeah, the degree of honesty, some of your responses was
yeah.
pretty awesome.
We hit it.
Pretty overwhelming. Yeah. And if you'd still like to respond, if you haven't listened to that episode, please go back and listen to it. And if you have something to say, let us know. Podcast it on Taking
yep,
Pictures.
Yep.
And we'll talk about it next time.
Yeah, good stuff. Photographer of the Week this week is a guy I can't believe we haven't done, but we haven't done. Paul Outerbridge.
Yep.
Who you out there will know his picture. One of his really famous pictures is of a collar on a checkerboard, a shirt collar on a checkerboard. You've seen it. It's always brought up as like an example of sort of 20s avant-garde advertising photography kind of thing, even though I don't think it was for advertising. It's called Idle Collar from 1922. And, you know, you look at that picture, and even today it feels modern-y. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like it could have been taken today, just the way it was shot and everything. He's also right. known, I will say, a mild NSFW, not safe for work, kind of mention on Outerbridge, because one of the things that he's known for are very early color photographs of nude women and sort of like quasi-fetishy kind of stuff. Nothing really dirty or anything like that. Just he was sort of known for that kind of stuff. And was derided at the time in many ways, apparently, for trying to make that kind of work. And playing with color photography at a time when it was still technologically in its adolescence. Go ahead.
Do you think the fact that it was color brought more criticism than had the same photographs been taken in
yeah,
black and white?
Yeah, sort of like, yeah, it's gaudy because it was shot in color and therefore it's lowbrow, you know, that kind mm-hmm, of thing. Mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. so, yeah. I mean, or at least I wouldn't be surprised if that were true.
I mean, because you had a lot sure. of photographers from that era experimenting with nudes and, yeah. and eroticism and surrealism, and they didn't seem to get the level of criticism.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because when you look at some of those pictures, and we'll put some links in the show notes, especially that New Yorker article where you can flip through There are the black and white shots, which are the stuff that a lot of people know of. They almost look like stylized advertising kind of shots. A lot of the kind of stuff Steichen was taking and those guys were taking in the 20s. But then the pictures of the women, a lot of them are really beautiful, but they're so different than the very structured still life stuff that he shot. God, that picture right. of the telephone from 1922 is so beautiful. Where it's like kind of shot from above and you can kind of see like just the circles. Right. Oh, love right, that right. picture. But they feel out of place. Like you would never think that those were taken by the same guy, you know? But they were. However, what happened was when advertising photography went color and everyone started shooting in color and doing all this kind of studio work, he started getting a lot of work like in the late 30s, early 40s for doing that kind of stuff. And it's just kind of crazy. In fact, in the end, he ended up retiring as a commercial photographer and moving to Hollywood in 1943 because of scandal over his fetish photographs, which I think is kind of interesting. But he can...
Ironic that less than a decade later...
Exactly.
The fetish photography would catch
on again.
Well,
that's the thing. This guy was so ahead of his time, you know. And it's odd, you know. Some of this stuff feels a little almost like... It's on the line between... They point out Man Ray, Duchamp, Bernie Abbott, Steichen, and it's like, well, how, you know, Man Ray and Steichen feel like very different things, but you can totally see how this guy's got a foot in both camps, you know?
Right.
And died fairly young. I think he was like 62 or something, lung cancer. Kids, don't smoke. So I just thought he would be a good move. I watched a video the other day of what's his name? Who's the guy whose name I always forget with the hat and the glasses, the photographer whose book I
Heisler.
Thank you. Why do I always forget his name?
I don't know, but that's the one that you get stuck on.
I do.
It's always like, who's the guy again with the glasses and the shirts?
I watched there's an hour and 16 minute video, and I'm gonna put a link in the show notes of Heisler discussing Arnold Newman. And at one point in it, he's just like, oh, here's this Newman shot. It's kind of an Outer Bridge kind of thing. And I went, Outer Bridge, we haven't talked about him very much. So anyway, I just thought he'd be a good choice. So go check it out. Maybe not when your boss is over
good
your
choice.
Shoulder. I'll put links in the show.
And if so, just don't, you know, only look at the black
exactly.
and whites.
But man, some of that still life stuff, I look at that kind of stuff and I think, God, how did he do that? And how do I do it? You know, there's like certain people's stuff. It's like, I know there's nothing special about what he's doing there. It's just that it looks so cool the way he did it, you know? And it could be that he's stopping down so much that he gets everything in focus, or maybe he was using a big camera and tilting to get everything in focus, which could be another way of doing it. Because sometimes I look at these pictures and I go, there's no way he could get that kind of depth of field to get all that stuff looking that good. But anyway,
right.
just one of those right. technical whodunit kind of things. That are fun to try to figure out. Maybe that'll be a fun little side project to try some still life stuff. You got anything else before we wrap this up and you can go get dinner?
No, I was just, you know, the idea of the color versus black and white with nudes or eroticism, that's a fascinating, that's an interesting
sure.
topic that maybe we can unpack
at
some
point. I'll put in the notes.
Is there, I don't know, are they more provocative because they're in color?
And the other thing that people do also is even if they're in color, ones that are graded artificially, you know what I mean? Like it's almost like the less realistic they are, the less dangerous they are, you know?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Or you go to the other side of somebody like Miles Aldridge or Ellen von Unwerth, whose their color work is so hyper-real, hyper-saturated.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good example, right?
You know, or La Chapelle.
Yep.
That's another one.
Yep. Or even Albert Watson did some nudes that are like, you know, a certain shift of color. Or even Annie has done nudes that are toned in such a way that they don't feel like standard photographs. And that somehow makes them okay. Yeah, lots of things to discuss. Yeah, let's talk about that.
So I wonder if, do we look at somebody, and this is maybe for that discussion as well, like Helmut Newton, who didn't go so over the top with the color, but some of that, some of his work was considered really, really edgy and really sort of not safe for work. And some of it was, frankly, but
sure.
I wonder, were the reactions stronger to somebody like his, you know, his work, were the reactions stronger to the color work or the black and white?
I think that a lot of his nudes were so striking in their technical excellence, you know, mm-hmm. that, or the lighting or the beauty of the models or, you know, all the normal standard stuff.
Right.
That they were in some ways elevated to art just on their form. You know, there's an argument to be made for that. Like that classic shot of him in the trench coat in the mirror where you see the woman from behind and her in the thing. Like, that, you know, I'll put a link.
With his wife.
His wife sitting there. Yeah. That's like one of the greatest pictures ever. You know, I'll put that link in the show notes too for those of you.
Now, I wonder, that's a great example. If that photograph had been colored, not colored, but color, would the reaction to it, industry-wide and maybe even you and I personally, do you think we would have different reactions to it if that were a color photo?
I think that the mono nature of that adds to this particular picture.
Yeah. You know. Interesting. Yeah, let's talk about that. That's kind of interesting.
And podcast at ontakingpictures.com is email 347-687-9411. You can leave us a voicemail at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Zdoris, at Wadman365 on Instagram, and the names on Twitter.
Sorry about the crappy
That's all right. You got anything else?
No.
Well, have a good trip back, and we'll get into the depression and we'll get into depression and color nudes next week.
Let's get into depression. Yeah, let's get into depression and erotic photography next week.
Sounds good.
Woohoo! So, all right, have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many. It's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say, though I know your words will lay me out. So I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way. Say